It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Well, you want magic? Well, then you want Murray Sawchuk, Murray the Magician. He's in a new show, Hilarious Deceptions, at the Strat's LA Comedy Club starting January 4th. This family-friendly magic show takes over the 4 p.m. slot on Saturdays and Sundays. And for ticket information, go to thestrat.com. For everything about Murray the Magician, go to murraymagic.com, and you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, X, and YouTube. And Murray, welcome back to the show.
How you doing, Ira?
Doing well. I went to look to see how many times you've been on the show over the years or decades at this point. Yeah. And I'm trying to remember, I couldn't find it all, but the fact that you're such a survivor and prosperer, I like that too. So you're both in a very crowded, competitive Las Vegas market. How do you do it?
You know, I think I look up to people that have done it already. You know, people like Lance Burton, Carrot Top, George Wallace, Louis Anderson when he was around, God rest his soul, you know. I just kind of followed their formats and how they promoted themselves, and also how they understood themselves as a brand. You know what I mean? And I think it's all about overhead, and it's all about knowing your audience and how many people you can bring in and what you're capable of. You know, and you have good producers that are fair. You have a great deal lasting here in Vegas a long time, you know.
But it's not just that. It's that you have to have talent, too. You can't just have
that. That doesn't hurt either. Yeah, that doesn't hurt either. You know, you got to have that as well. As you know, there's so many talented people on the Strip. And how many shows do we see that open up? And the show's great. I mean, if the show opened in the middle of Oklahoma or Ohio, it would be a hit because there's no other competition. Right. But in Vegas, as you know, there's so much competition, and people come to Vegas for a minimum or maximum of 3 days, right, at the most, and they only have so much time on their hands. So that's what you're fighting against. You know, you're fighting against their money, their time, what they're really here for, and where you fit in with that schedule, you know?
And you did a lot of marketing, including very smartly on YouTube and appearing all over these places, so that when people do come to Las Vegas, they say, wait a minute, this is the guy that I just saw on YouTube, or the Pawn Show, or this other show, or here and there. So let's go see him. He's reasonably priced. He's funny. He's talented. Let's do this. And so then you keep it going.
Yeah, well, I try to appeal to anybody from, you know, age 2 to 102, you know, depending.
I'm at the 102 range, just so.
Exactly, perfect. See, that's why we're still talking. And it's one of those things where I think it's important to do that. I think it's I always call it that Ronald McDonald factor. You know what I mean? When people walk up to me, a lot of people go, oh my God, you're the guy. And I don't know what they mean. I mean, it could be YouTube, Pawn Stars, America's Got Talent, Master of Illusion, you know, TikTok or whatever the case is, but I've really tried to be that guy across all boards. Yeah, you know, if you look at, you know, who's become a dear friend of mine now, is Howie Mandel. Was a comedian. Now he's obviously one of the top judges on America's Got Talent, and a great comedian and actor and game show host. But he's learned how to keep it alive as well. You know, another Canadian. You know, and he's figured out how to kind of figure out how do you stay on people's radar. You know, and he does YouTubes and he does TikToks and all that stuff. You know,
but even doing all of that, you still have to pay attention to the performance, because clearly you have certain skills that you want to communicate to the audience. And so you have to be able to show that on a consistent basis. So do you still, even after all these years, rehearse a lot, or do you just go on because you know all this stuff?
No, I do. I do rehearse a lot, depending on what I'm doing and if it's a new trick or a new idea. Like, I just finished filming the Hollywood Christmas Parade that they're airing, the 92nd Christmas Parade. And I wanted to come up with a new magic trick. And, you know, I there's other tricks I can do. And I thought, you know, I've been known to put things inside of things, meaning like a beer bottle that's unopened. And you pick a card and I put it inside a sealed beer bottle or a sealed package of, you know, noodles or whatever, ramen or whatever. So I thought, well, we all have snow globes, you know, at Christmas and holidays. Right. And I thought it'd be kind of cool if I had a snow globe, because everyone can relate to that from any age.
Absolutely.
And if I had you pick a card and then I somehow made it vanish, me not knowing the card, and appear inside a snow globe, That'd be pretty cool, you know? So that's something I worked on for about 2 weeks because I had to get a snow globe built. And I've never made a snow globe in my life because it's magical and I need to do my own trickery with the globe. I can't just go to CVS or, you know, Home Goods and buy a snow globe because it's not going to work for me. But I went through three or four snow globes. I didn't realize how water and glue and cards and all this other stuff react to each other. So I went through three or four snow globes to figure out what I need to do. And then we ended up doing it, and we, you know, it's going to be airing, you know, this season a few times on
Great. That's
DW. Yeah,
great.
which would be great. But I'm always working on stuff. But that I did practice for a while because I'd never done it before, you know, and I did it once, and I'll probably never do it again, you know, because I try to not repeat myself when I do television, you know. So
Well, I think that where you went wrong is when you did the beer bottle and you had the card in the beer bottle, but unfortunately the member of the audience was an alcoholic and wanted the beer instead of the card. So you never did
exactly.
that again. Or
And he
maybe
forgot this card, and so it didn't even matter.
Exactly.
He knew the name of the beer, Bud Light.
Yeah, of course.
Course.
When you said, could tell us a little bit, for those who are listening and watching, tell us a little bit about your background that people may not know everything about you. In other words, it's just an interesting backstory, but I'd rather have you share it with the audience.
Sure. I mean, long story short, I'm in Vancouver, Canada, British Columbia. I grew up with people like Michael J. Fox and Michael Bublé, and that we all lived in the same area, a little town called Burnaby, which is right beside Vancouver, kind of like saying Henderson to Las Vegas. You know, that's how close it is.
So a zone for
And
celebrities, in other words.
I don't know about that, but I know Pam Anderson's from up there on the island, and Leslie Nielsen and Martin Short, and the list goes on, Jim Carrey, you know. And but to make real money, we come down here, you know, to the
Yeah,
land of the
sure.
free, you know. So, but yeah, and my family was all railway, you know, railway and the mill. My mother's side was cutting down trees in the forestry world. That was her father. And then my dad's side was all railway, trains and locomotives and all that stuff. And so I was a black sheep trying to do something different. My dad played music, so I guess I got my entertainment side from him. And I thought, let's go for it. So I started doing cruise ships and touring around, came to Vegas 2002, opened at the Frontier Hotel. Way back in the day, this is before Groupon, this is before Instagram, before YouTube. You know, we might have had Facebook, and we might have, I know we had AOL dial-up.
We
I know
may have
we had
had
that.
cell phones, who knows, at
I know, yeah, analog maybe.
that
Yeah. And so that was that. And I did that in 2002, opened up January 26, 2002, got my feet wet in Las Vegas. And that's when I really thought, when you come to Vegas, you really just need to be talented. And that's not the case. You need
No.
more than that. You need a business sense. You need marketing, advertising. You also need a reason why people need to go see you. You know, because all the magicians in town are wonderful. All the singers are wonderful. All the circus shows are wonderful. So how do you carve that little slice of pie for yourself, you know? And so I toured, traveled, and I've played many hotels up and down the strip, from the Crazy Horse from Paris at the MGM to opening for Amazing Jonathan, the Flamingo, and all that stuff. And the Tropicana for, you know, 12 years, Planet Hollywood. Now we're opening, of course, at the Stratosphere in a few weeks, you know. So that's kind of my history, long and short of it, you know.
You know, I like it. I want people to know about your background because not everybody gets the chance to get a little bit behind the scenes with Murray the Magician. The fact that you're going to, they call it the Strat now, so you're high up there on the top, overlooking the Las Vegas Strip and downtown. Actually, you get both, I think, from that height, and most of the valley as well. Do you find that each time you make a move to a property, do you add to your core audience, or do you get a whole new audience because of the venue?
I think you add to it. Every time you move to a new hotel, you do bring a different audience to them, and they also share that with you. So, you know, it works both ways. You
Sure.
know, a perfect example is, you know, Garth Brooks going to the Wynn. I don't know if there's a lot of country stars that normally stay at the Wynn. Maybe there are, maybe there isn't. If I had to take a guess, I'd probably say there's more people that are into classical music, or, you know, it's not a cheap hotel. I mean, rich people love country music too. I'm not saying that. But I think when Garth Brooks moved to the Wynn, I think it brought a different class and style of people, because Garth Brooks, you'd normally see him at an MGM Grand, or you'd see him at Treasure Island, you know, that kind of, you know,
Exactly.
NASCAR, Middle America, you
Sure.
know. So I think every hotel, when you bring an act to a hotel, they bring new people to your show, and you also bring a new clientele into their world, which I think that's the benefit of having another place to do shows, you know. And you help both if you can't help each other out, then it's not worth being there, you know.
Oh, that makes sense. You said something earlier, which I it is important. You looked at the scene and you saw that how do you make yourself different than other entertainers? And I'll use the broader sense, entertainers rather than just magicians. How do you make yourself different than other entertainers to be competitive and stay competitive in the Las Vegas market? For you, what were those elements that distinguished you from other entertainers or and or magicians?
I think being more real with who I am, you know, I do magic for a living. I do comedy for a living. You know, most of my stuff is 80% comedy now. Magic's just the vehicle. It's all because I'm not a serious person. You know, obviously I'm in my hat today, but my hair is obviously wild and crazy and you just can't be serious like that. I'm just not a serious person. And I've always wanted to be a comedian and ever since I was a kid. So, but magic made it different enough that I wasn't just a stand-up. Because of the fact that there's so many stand-up comedians. It's kind of like the Carrot Top Factor or Gallagher, you know, or Weird Al Yankovic, you know, or all these different people that you know, or Judy Tenuta with the accordion. You have a little bit more of a hook, and I've always liked that. You know, I've always been brandable as well. I grew up watching so many different acts like Liberace, you know, and Lucille Ball, and they all took a little bit of them and then really made it exorbitant, so they really stood out in their own way. And so for me, I always had my wild hair and glasses. And of course, I always did other TV shows that most people wouldn't do. You know, I've done Wipeout and did Blind Date years ago, things that wouldn't be in the wheelhouse of a comedian to do or a magician. I thought, why not do it? I want to be different, you know. And also, I'll do videos that may get a more controversy now and then just because that's what people talk about. You do something nice and clean and well, no one talks about it. You do something that, like my prank videos that I do on YouTube all the time, where I'm pranking cops or parking attendants or helping the handicapped people who don't park in handicapped spots or people that do, and I prank them, it gets a reaction. You know, and the magic's not that new, but the idea and the scene is different. And that's how you get the reaction of people. It's the same reason you look at Coca-Cola. Why do we still buy Coke or Pepsi or Gatorade or, you know, Welch's grape juice? You know, it's because every year they try to reinvent a reason why you should drink their juice or make cupcakes with it, or you can use it in popsicles or whatever the heck they do. They try to reinvent the reason to buy their product. And I think that's what an entertainer has to do.
Yeah, big fail with the new Coke, but they went back.
Yeah, right? So, I know, right?
When you stage some of these pranks and things that you do, do you have a steady, I don't know if that's the word, do you have I guess steady, that's fine. Do you have a steady crew you work with, or do you use different people in terms of
pranks? I do. I mean, my producer for that is Seth Leach. He's been with me since 2015. Dear friend of mine, you know, kind of like a younger brother, but he's very smart on how to produce videos and what the world's looking for. He's also younger than me, so he has his pulse on what's cooking and what's trending. And so we'll make videos that trend properly, you know, that go towards the trend or that get the algorithm going, you know. And it really is work. You can't just
let
people think, oh, grandma shot a video of their grandson doing something funny on a slide and it went viral. That's unfortunately not the way it goes. Somebody will find that and then they'll put it on BuzzFeed or somewhere else and tweak it, and then all of a sudden put a great thumbnail and a great title, and away it goes, you know. But it really is an art form, social media, and what makes us as humans twig, you know, and take off or show an interest in something, you know.
And it's clear that you've thought this through just from talking with you now. I've known you for many years, but as you're talking, I'm listening and getting the sense that you have thought through all these elements of presentation, business, show business, which is business, of course, anyway. But all of these elements to your act and to your life and your career, and that's how you sustained over these years, because you're not just willy-nilly, okay, I'll go to this venue and perform, and then I'll go to this venue and perform. You're looking at, as you said earlier, ticket sales, how you're going to market it, the type of venue it is, how many seats are in there, what can I bring to it, what's the cost of operation, et cetera. So you don't always get that. I don't get that too often when I'm talking with an entertainer. The entertainer, they're usually just thinking about what it is that they're going to put up on stage when they get there.
And that's the problem. You know, that's why I think a lot of acts don't last in Las Vegas, because they aren't real with who they are, you know. And I think as an act, you have to look at yourself as a product. And so if I'm selling, you know, if I'm selling a product to you, say it's a candle for Christmas or a stuffed animal or something like that, I want to know, why am I selling it? What's the appeal? How many can I sell? And why would somebody want to buy this thing? Oh, when you hit the hand, the thing winks at you and says, Merry Christmas. Okay, that's cute. That's a cool idea. Okay, in the back, you can program it to say anybody's name. Wow, wait a minute. That's even more sellable now. I mean, I can even say my wife's name, Danny, or my kid's name or my cousin's name. Well, that's kind of cool. So now I can program that. So when my little cousin hits the hand who's 4 years old, it says, "Hey, Bobby, Merry Christmas." Well, that's pretty cool. That even makes it more impressive to buy because most toys don't do that. So that's how you kind of have to recreate yourself as an act, you know. And also, you know, I'm in Arizona now and dear friends with Alice Cooper here and his wife, Cheryl, and I did their charities for many, many years. And I was just talking to my wife about Alice Cooper, how he stayed in the game all his life, you know.
Sure,
and
yeah.
There was times he played huge arenas. There's times he plays those in Europe now, but there's also times he plays 1,000-seat theaters because, you know, his number one hit was back in 78 or whatever it was, you know, and you keep those hits going until you have another one. Or you're a guest star on a movie with Johnny Depp or whatever the case is, and you have another, you know, then you can sell out more tickets. But the key is to really know where you're at. And if people are still buying tickets for you, whether it be 50 tickets, 500 tickets, 5,000 tickets, you're still in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, don't get upset. That's the way humans are. We love and hate things. Some cars are popular now that weren't popular years ago. And some that were popular now are never going to be popular in 10 years. You know, it could be the Tesla truck or not. I mean, one day, who knows what it's going to be like, you know. But right now, it's the talk of the town. And 20 years from now, it could be the DeLorean. But now the DeLorean is really popular right now. They're really rare now. And people love them. So you never know. But the key is to not stop, you know, and keep going. And if there's an audience for you to work for them, and don't oversell yourself. Just be you and do a great job, you know.
That's wise advice.
Yeah.
Wise advice. You mentioned your producer has been with you a while, and that's another pattern of yours, which I think, or an attribute, which I admire, which is you have a lot of loyalty to the people that work with you, and the people that work with you have a lot of loyalty to you. So you've got Doug, who you've worked with forever,
yep.
And your lovely bride, who you've worked with
Danny.
As well. Yeah. So is that just part of your personality that you engender this loyalty and that you give this loyalty, or did you learn that over time?
I think loyalty you learn over time, and you also realize certain people are hard to replace. I mean, everyone's replaceable. You know what I mean? Me, you, everybody. Within,
me? Wait a minute. Hey.
What? What? Exactly. Oh. I know. Shocking. Okay. You know, but I think the real reason is to respect that person for what they've given to you and helped you work with, and also understand where they fit into your lives. And sometimes those people, if working relationships, don't, because you're not doing a project that they're very good at, you know, at that moment. They were good for a time, and now you've changed gears or pivoted a little bit, and that's okay. Nothing's wrong with that. Sure. You know, even Howard Stern, very famous, as you know, on the radio, and he had a certain people that was on there a lot, and then when he moved to Sirius, he switched out and got rid of some people that used to make his show, because he changed his format, changed his pace, and that's okay. Nothing's wrong with that. American Idol and America's Got Talent changed their judges a lot, you know, because at the time it worked and it's time to change and mix it up. The Voice is notorious for doing that, you know, for ratings and that. So it's not because the people aren't any good anymore. It's the fact that it's nice to change things up a little bit. You know what I mean? It's nice to paint your car a different color. It makes it feel like a new car, even though it isn't, you know.
For people listening and not watching, the people watching can tell, but the people listening won't know. So I'm going to tell them that you look about 12 years old.
Thank you. 13, maybe.
All right, 13. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. But I think part of that comes from your approach, as you said earlier, that you enjoy fun. You're not getting into anything deep. You're just simply wanting to perform for people, have fun, and enjoy life.
100%. And it's also how you treat people. You know, I love the business that I'm in, and you know, you have to know that. And in time, you can be replaced. You know, there's plenty of magicians in town and singers and dancers and acts and all that stuff. But if you're a good person, you have a great product, and you're true to yourself, and you're good to the people around you, you'll stay around for a long time. You know what I mean? Because I always say, you know, when you walk into an office building and you meet the secretary, who's probably maybe in her early 20s, or maybe he's early in his early 20s, whoever might be there, be nice to them. Because in 20 years, they could own the company.
That's true.
It happens a lot. Yeah, trust me. And all of a sudden, you walk in and you're like, and you'll walk in looking for a job because maybe things aren't going great. And they'll go, can I, you know, speak to Mrs. So-and-so who owns the company? Go, oh, they've passed away. We have a new owner. And that new owner walks around the corner and you go, oh my God, it's the secretary that I was not nice to 20 years ago. Yeah. And now you will never get a job with them, because that secretary is so valuable, because they know everything about the company. So you work up within the company, you know, a lot of, especially with entertainment agencies in that. It's not something you just go to school for and you just take over. It's something you work your way through. You know, the longer you're with an agency, the more valuable you are. So be nice to everybody, even the janitor.
Exactly. And that phrase, be happy to or be kind to people on your way up, you'll meet them on the way down, 100%. Really does apply. You just never know in this business. And it could be something that happens, as you say, 20 years later, all of a sudden you go, oh, that person. And they remember you because they had the bad experience.
That's right.
Or they had the good experience. So whatever they have, they'll remember.
Exactly. 100%.
That makes sense a lot. Well, when you first moved to Las Vegas and you started working hard, did you think that you would still be here after all these years, or that you'd still be in the entertainment business, but you'd be working elsewhere? I know you do work elsewhere. You tour quite a bit. But did you have that sense that Las Vegas would be your, for want of a better term, your base?
I never knew that. I mean, it's hard to believe I've been in Vegas now 22 years and on the Las Vegas Strip for 22 years. I never, that's half my life. You know what I mean? It's pretty wild. So it's crazy. You know, the time does fly and then I'm still in the game and still here. And Vegas has changed a lot, you know. But I also look up to people. You look at the Miley Cyruses and Dolly Partons and Cher, you know, and all these different acts that are still out there. And the reason they're still working is because they weren't scared to change and go with the trend and not be stuck in their ways, you know. And that's why as YouTube came along and TikTok and different forms of entertainment and showbiz came along, I jumped right into it. Even though it wasn't comfortable, you think, well, this is not the way I did it back in the day. It doesn't matter. It's the way it is now. So go with it, you know what I mean? And just don't, you know, don't bitch and complain. Just go on with it, you know.
I think you're right, but I think there's also exceptions. I'm thinking particularly of someone like Frank Sinatra or Tony Bennett, who generally remain true to themselves in the sense of their style. Mm-hmm. Frank Sinatra occasionally tried something to be a little bit more hip, quote unquote, during periods of time in the 60s and 70s. But I think he returned to himself, his unique style, as Tony always had his unique style. And they went on for decades. So I guess there are exceptions to that rule. But I think your rule generally is correct, that you have to look at where you are, what's the market like? What's
lost? Well, now look, don't forget too, with Frank Sinatra, when he was getting towards the end of his career, which I think he probably should have left the stage 5-6 years sooner than he did, because the voice was going and the memory and all that stuff. But you were going to see Frank sing the old tunes. The only difference is Tony Bennett was absolutely brilliant, which you see a lot of people doing now, from Tom Jones to Brooks and Dunn to everybody now. They're taking their old hits and bring in somebody in super famous and super young and super attractive and reigniting their career, like what he did with Lady Gaga. And he changed Lady Gaga's career, made her a very super classy non-pop star, adult contemporary star, the world over, you know, took her from this pop star to almost Celine Dion quality, you know what I mean? By bringing her in, and then people who loved Lady Gaga was like, who's this Tony Bennett? They're 16 years old or 19 or 20. And, you know, Tony is 89 or 90. And all of a sudden they're like, this is kind of cool. That music's kind of cool because she brought this. So all of a sudden Tony became super hip at 90 years old, whereas Frank didn't have that at the time. Frank was still Frank. But Tony Bennett really figured that out, or his people did, and said, this is a beautiful thing, you know, and now he's honored in her show and he lives on, of course. But he actually became a really cool dude by teaming up with Lady Gaga, you know. Of course, a lot of Ray Charles done it with people and everybody, you know, but now it seems to be a great way to keep that album's rolling and the number one hits rolling, you know.
Well, the one thing that Sinatra did too, though, he did duets, a couple of albums of duets where he did team with people, but generally with well-known people already. What you're saying is Bennett did it with Lady Gaga at a moment where it really just blew apart.
But it was wild. The TV show was so beautiful. They did, I think, Radio City Music Hall or Lincoln Center or something. It was great.
Yeah, it was. Have you thought about that in terms of, because you're always creative and you're thinking of different things, have you thought about doing, for want of a better term, a duet type thing with another well-known magician where maybe it's a surprise and they come out on stage and you work with them on maybe it's not for the whole time on stage, but for 10 minutes you're doing certain magical illusions with another magician that's well-known, but the audience doesn't expect it, or later on they do expect it, and it's just a nice feature of the show.
Yeah, I've definitely done that a few times, or popped into people's shows at times. You know, I remember when I was at Planet Hollywood, Gallagher, he'd pop in, and I'd do a joke about predicting somebody, and somehow I'd force the famous Gallagher pitcher, you know, out of all the stars I had. And no one knew he was backstage. And of course, I go, my God, you chose Gallagher. And I was like, is he still alive? And as soon as I said that, he'd walk out on stage and go, yeah, I'm still right here. I'm like, wow. I said, yeah, I didn't know you were alive. And he just walked in and was like, was that just Gallagher? Like, here I predicted, like, out of five stars they could have picked, they narrowed it down to Gallagher. Obviously, I forced the idea that they picked that. And then I go, and my line is obviously, isn't he dead? And then this is when he was alive, obviously. And he'd walk out on stage. And could you imagine that? I mean, that's just such a great bit.
Yes,
it's worth him waiting backstage for 45 minutes for that 30-second bit. Because that for people to see that, it was like, I cannot believe we just saw Gallagher. You know, so yeah, we have done those. But in magic, there's not enough famous magicians that you'd probably get that reaction from. Yes, Copperfield, Penn and Teller, Piff, you know, people right. like that are brandable like that, David Blaine, you know, or Chris Angel. But it's, I think it'd be stronger doing something with a pop star, you know, Bruno Mars or Sammy Hagar. Yeah,
it'd be great if you could do it. Are you sure that was Gallagher or was it Gallagher too?
No, it was Gallagher. Yeah, exactly. No, it was Gallagher. I know. Is his brother alive at all still or not?
That's a good question. I
don't know if he passed before him. I know Gallagher obviously just passed about a year ago. But
yeah, I'm just trying to think. I know you're right about Gallagher passing. I think his brother went too, but I don't want to say that and be wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good thing to look up while we go.
I know. Yeah, he's such a legend, that man.
It is. Before I let you go, I have one last question, but I want to point out that, as you mentioned, you're yourself. And just to kind of verify that for people who may not know, is that occasionally I will bump into you at the market. I won't identify the market because, you know, it'll be mobbed. But occasionally there you are bringing out groceries. And I, wait a minute, Murray, is that you? Yeah. Okay. You're
yep.
Party, you're bringing bottles of stuff out to the car. So,
of course.
Here's my last question. What do you, are you, I don't know that you have a 5-year plan because you are business oriented. Is there a 5-year plan or looking ahead what you see yourself doing in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, I always love TV. I always love streaming now because that's now a thing. Streaming is now our new TV, Netflix, Hulu, and all that stuff. So I think my next thing is to be consistently on TV, on my own show, whether I'm hosting something, whether I'm doing it myself. We're always pitching TV shows in Hollywood and LA, but it's not easy. I've been doing it all my life, and I've been on, you know, many, many shows, of course, but more so as a guest star and a regular here and there, like Master of Illusion and Celebrity Cadaver and a few other shows. But I really, you know, what I would like in the next 5 years is to really be the lead of my own show, whether it be a host or, you know, a prank master or a magician figure or whatever it is. I mean, I think that's probably, as I have gotten older now, I feel like that's my next step, I think, you know, which I would really like in my career, where I can go to a studio or go to a set or whatever and do a weekly TV show, you know, or a series on Netflix, you know, or Hulu or, you know, wherever it is. So
that's a great, I think that's a great way to leave it. My guest is Murray Sawchuk. Murray, the magician, performing in his new show, Hairlarious Deceptions, at the Strat's LA Comedy Club, starting January 4th. And it's a family-friendly magic show. It takes over the 4 p.m. slot on Saturdays and Sundays. For ticket information, go to thestrat.com. And for everything about Murray the magician, go to murraymagic.com, murraymagic.com. You can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, X, and of course, YouTube. Murray, thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, and happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Hey, Las Vegas. Anything you want us to be.